The opinions expressed are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the official positions of the sponsors, advertisers, or presenters. Advertising does not imply endorsement by the sponsors and presenters.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Lighting Controls Podcast. We have another fantastic guest for you today, someone who you have not seen with us since before we were officially the Lighting Controls Podcast, someone that joined us back during the conversation series. Before we jump into everything, let me just take a minute to remind everyone that today's episode is presented by the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
It's also financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, or NAILD. Check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com, where we have all of our episodes, a news feed, and even a merch store if you want to support the podcast. Additionally, you should check us out when we go to Legication this year. It's going to be in March. I will be presenting. March is this month, by the way, but it's a couple weeks away, and check us out. We'll be there Tuesday, but I will also be presenting with Rita Renner from McWong, and you should check us out. Until then, though, we have Craig DeLuey. Craig, do you mind just giving us a quick breakdown on who you are and what you do?
Sure. The name is Craig DeLuey. I'm Education Director of the Lighting Controls Association, and have a long history in the lighting industry going back to the 90s, where I worked with in marketing with different companies making retrofit products like Advanced Transformer and Philips and so on. Ended up becoming editor of Architectural Lighting Design magazine, did that for 7 years, left and went on my own. And ever since, I've been the lighting columnist for Electrical Contractor magazine, lighting columnist for TED magazine. I write for other publications. I work with different organizations like NAMCO. I've done work with the IES and some manufacturers, and a client that dear to my heart and that I've been working with for a very long time, and I couldn't be happier doing something I really believe in, is the Lighting Controls Association. I've been with the organization for over 20 years now, and have been representing it as its education director, helping to build its programs and communicate its messages to the industry.
Sure. Well, thank you so much for coming on to the show again, you know, now that we're the official Lighting Controls Podcast as opposed to the conversation series. And a big appreciation for all the support you guys give the podcast, because, you know, it is presented by the Lighting Controls Association. Those who hadn't watched the conversation series episode or don't really know much about the Lighting Controls Association, do you mind just explaining, you know, what is the Lighting Controls Association? How does it integrate with the world of lighting design?
Sure. It's an organization, a consortium of manufacturers. We're actually a council of NEMA, the National Electrical Manufacturers Association. They give us a lot of support. But it's funded by member companies, lighting control manufacturers. And our mission is to educate the public about lighting controls and to promote the category. So that expresses itself in a wide range of programs. So we'll go to a lot of organizations in the industry. We used to have this problem where we would everybody would recreate the wheel over and over again at great cost, explaining CRI, and then these guys explain CRI. We said, well, we explain control, so why don't you let us do that? And we'll work with you, and you can use us. And that was a partnership offer that worked with a lot of different organizations, and they were very happy to let us do that. So that's one thing we do. Another thing we do is category promotion. For example, we support about 10 to 15 years ago, we had a meeting with IES and we said, you guys do a lighting design award and it's wonderful, but I don't see controls. And so how do we recognize lighting controls as a part of lighting? That is, at the time, was significantly growing importance very rapidly due to energy codes and other concerns. And so we proposed to them a lighting design award that would have some focus on lighting, but a really heavy focus on the integration of the expression of the lighting with lighting controls. And we published those projects, and we've been doing that ever since. And we have like dozens, if not maybe even hundreds actually, of these projects on our, every award of merit gets published on our website and we promote it. So that's the kind of thing we do as well. But probably our mainstay is Education Express, which is an online 24/7 self-directed program of education courses dealing with everything about lighting controls, energy codes, design practices, best practices, commissioning, on up to all the various technology like wireless, network lighting controls, and so on. And so to date, we've educated 46,000 students.
Wow.
And growing every month. Yeah, 46,000 students who have completed at this point over 1 million learning hours for education credit. And so that's just that's our main thing that we do, and probably what we're best known for. We're accredited or recognized by pretty much every major organization. Our education curriculum is also the basis of it's the front end of a certification, CalCTP in California, and it's also the basis of the NAMCO CLCP certification. And so DLC recognizes us, AIA, we're accredited, NCQLP recognizes us, and so on and so forth. And so I would say, we have done so much for so long, 20 years worth of programming. And every time we do something that works, we keep doing it. So it just constantly growing. I'll just leave it there. But that's pretty much what we do. Those are the main things that we do, category promotion and industry education.
No, and I think, that right there, like those two things are so important. And from everybody that we've spoken to on the Lighting Controls podcast, I mean, there is always this, this demand for more education. And so, that's one of the reasons why we think that the Lighting Controls Association is just such a massive boon to our industry, because of the fact that all of these resources are free to people who are using them. Your support is coming directly from the manufacturers, who are the people who are really spearheading a lot of the initiatives when it comes to technology. So it's a really win-win situation to have all of that. And, I can't say enough about all of the initiatives that the Lighting Controls Association does on behalf of getting education out there. And so anybody who's like, well, I wish I knew more about lighting controls, I mean, Lighting Controls Association is basically the resource, to your point. So, yes. I think it's wonderful, everything that you guys are doing. And so from the perspective of the Lighting Controls Association, since you have such a finger on the pulse of the industry, where do you think we are with lighting controls in North America, particularly?
Okay, that's a really big question. All right, let's
totally.
Do this. I'm noticing a couple different trends that are kind of coming at the category from a number of different directions. Let's start with decarbonization. Okay. Mm-hmm. So there's a wide scientific consensus that the Earth is warming and that human activity is contributing and directly causing it. And that this warming make short-term create different winners and losers if you look at economics. But overall, it's a lose for most human beings. And so there's a great thrust right now legislatively in American energy policy to not just save energy, but to decarbonize. And as energy codes kind of realize their intent with lighting, and to an extent with lighting controls, and as the existing buildings market continues to have like this real mishmash of adoption of energy saving technologies, there's going to be a demand for a more comprehensive retrofit. There was a study by LaSalle that indicated that the rate of retrofits in North America would have to triple for the United States to meet its obligations under the under the Paris Accords to keep a global temperature rise within an acceptable limit. And so to do that, you know, buildings are something like 30% of carbon emissions. And then you look at what lighting's share of that is, and it's gone down a lot because of LED, but it can go down a lot more with lighting controls. And so some type of impetus and policy is going to have to occur there, whether it's on the rebate side or it's on the policy side. There's some interesting things happening at the municipal level where buildings have to report their emissions and satisfy caps. And if they don't cap, they have to then offset it by buying renewables, and if they don't do that, they have to pay a penalty. And so that becomes a cost. All of these things, and with electrification, that's also another aspect of decarbonization. We're now looking at, you know, if you electrify the entire transportation sector, that's going to put a huge demand on the electrical grid, and it's definitely going to have an influence on energy pricing. And so as the energy pricing goes up, lighting controls and deeper retrofits, more comprehensive retrofits become more attractive. So that's one thing that's on my radar, but it is political. It depends on who's in charge, whether there's any federal action or if it's all going to happen at the state and municipal level. And so we have to see what's going to occur there. Another trend is that the LED revolution has largely won. And so if you look at the existing buildings market, which is really where there's so much possible activity in energy savings, LED has penetrated, at least in some regions of the country, more than 50% of the installed base. And so when that happens, you're now past the early adopters, you're past the early majority, you're now in the late majority, and after that, you've got the laggards. So for rebate programs and for, you know, everyone in the lighting industry who sells into the existing buildings market, this is going to be harder. We're now having, it's all going uphill now because you have to convince people who haven't been able to be convinced yet. And so this is something that is more difficult for the lighting practitioners. And it's also very, very difficult for the rebate programs, as they traditionally have looked at lighting and said, wow, we're going to get so much energy savings, and it's getting harder and harder to get that every year to hit our targets. And you're starting to see that shift already right now. And so I think that what's going to happen is there's an initiative by utilities right now to look at lighting a little bit differently and maybe change their economics, that it's no longer low-hanging fruit, something easy, high, short payback, let's do this, but that it can be more comprehensive. Maybe lighting design approaches may end up being rebated. Maybe it's HVAC integration at a high level in the architecture. Maybe it's network lighting controls and luminaire level lighting controls. There's lots of, maybe it's looking at a specialized application like horticultural or UV disinfection or tunable lighting. There's lots of different things. And maybe there's a data component where you have to have a network lighting control system to produce data and monitoring on what is happening with the system. Utilities are looking at this right now. They're studying it. And honestly, I'm not really sure which way it's going to go. We're at a crossroads here. Right. One thing is for sure, the LED revolution has largely won, which is wonderful. Lighting used to be 40% of a commercial building. Now it's something like 10% of the electrical load, 5 to 10% even. The downside of that, a lot of this TLEDs, it's like this mishmash of stuff, and a lot of energy savings were left on the table, and in particular, lighting controls were left out in a lot of these retrofits because the economics weren't there, and they were like, hey, we want this to have a payback a month. Well, even occupancy sensors with a rebate could probably do that, but it adds months, and that's not acceptable to some people. So they don't get the job. So they have to, it's a kind of a race, a competition for who can offer that highest ROI gets the job. And as a result, value adds tend to get left on the table. You could look at this as that was a lost opportunity, or looking at decarbonization plus utilities, reevaluating the rebate programs. Maybe this is an opportunity
sure.
To take and get, have another chance at it. And this is not just for lighting controls. It's something I honestly grandiosely called LED Revolution 2.0, because I wanted to get people's attention right. to the concept. But what I meant by that is there's a lot of stuff installed. Not all of it was done right. A lot of it's older gen, and a lot of it is the least effort, you know, like just, we put in some TLED lamps. This decarbonization and what's going to happen with rebates, all of this is an fascinating potential opportunity for us to go back and do it again and more comprehensively fixtures, redesign comprehensively with lighting controls, energy codes are applying, and get those deep energy savings, get that high flexibility, the high quality of light, and the most amount of user convenience and comfort coming from the control system. It's sort of, so there's a, is that going to happen 100? I don't know, probably not, but we have, I think we're going to heading into an era where we actually have that opportunity. And so that gives me cause to be excited for sure for the future.
Well, I can definitely tell you that if people weren't paying attention, they are right now, because there's a lot to unpack in just that last couple of minutes, right? And so as we move toward, I mean, just to pick on one little thing, right? As we move sure. towards this idea of electrification and the demand on the grid and the utilities, and you mentioned rebates, there's very quickly likely going to be a carrot and stick game going on, right? Where someone's going to dangle the carrot for the rebate, but if you don't pay attention to the carrot, someone's going to come knocking with a stick and they're going to make you do it, right? So
that
very well may turn into something. But as we move towards electrification, and like you said, where lighting is 10% or less on a lot of these building demands, it seems like there's a transition here, not only to, you know, luminaire level lighting control and to do things a little better and work through your design, but more of a holistic approach where we're using the electricity, because we have electricity to each fixture, and we use the, you know, what we already have for the lighting system to take that holistic approach towards a control of the entire building and not just the lighting control system. And do you see that as maybe a potential path forward to not necessarily more adoption, but potentially easier adoption for certain people who have been leery of various lighting control systems, and perhaps make it easier for these building owners to look at a replacement approach where they're looking at a holistic replacement rather than a single system?
Yeah, I want to be careful about the trap of considering the high end of, say, the high end of lighting controls would be LLC and network lighting controls that has a system building wide architecture, maybe a server or the cloud that's generating data, and it's like a fully realized system. I want to be careful about falling into the trap of saying, well, if that system doesn't get big adoption, people don't want it. It's like, well, wait a minute. A smaller, medium-sized building, they don't have a system operator who's going to, or that might be too many features for them. So we have to really look at, I mean, if you look at it in homes, you know, home security, which you would consider to be probably the hottest thing, it's never gotten more than 15% penetration. But you would think that would be the gimme go-to, everybody would want that. But in terms of home automation, people buy home automation, but at only 15% penetration, I don't know if it's ever topped that. I think we're going to see the same thing with networked lighting controls. First of all, at the room level, I think it's just going to continue to grow through new construction. I think it's going to continue to grow in renovations. It's an easy thing to do. It's actually more convenient. There's a lot of advantages to it in new construction. In existing buildings, and I think you're going to see a lot more of the network lighting controls at the global level in new construction as well. But it's going to be, you know, larger buildings, larger customers, and so on. In the existing buildings market, it's tougher. It'll probably be wireless. And then you have to look at the cost. And so those cost those mechanics are changing if energy goes up, or if a decarbonization penalty enters into it, or if a new rebate comes along supporting that specific category, the economics change, and maybe we will see that. But in many existing buildings, it's a very hard sell. Like in the majority of buildings are medium and small. I don't believe they are the majority of square footage, but they are the majority of actual buildings. And you will see a lot of maybe room-based solutions being installed at the high end, and then a lot of maybe some LLC. You'll see, you know, if nothing else, an aux sensor on the wall. Mm-hmm. I think we will see a lot of that. But you have to look at the, you know, lighting control technology as an ecology of cost and benefit on tiers, and those align with the market, different types of applications. On a final note, I think one thing that'll really help in the existing buildings market is that wireless continues to strengthen. Mm-hmm. It is something that has a lot of advantages for existing construction, obviously, especially retrofit, and especially more challenging or irregular buildings. And right now I'm keeping my eye on some of the protocols, like Bluetooth NLC is pretty mm-hmm. interesting. Dolly, of course, is unwired, and they have their wireless extension. Zigbee's still there. I'm curious if any of this is, especially Bluetooth NLC, is going to be game changer. Mm-hmm. That will enable it to go from being that, okay, this is a big complex project with lots of hours and people and, you know, for a big building, you know, maybe like with wireless, we'll see more penetration into smaller and medium sized buildings and get more of that value, something that's scalable that you can then add more capabilities to it as time goes on. And, so that's very exciting. But I think this, so anyway, Dan, to address your question in lots of different ways here, I think that's kind of what's going on. And I think that that things are looking bright across the category. But I think we need to be careful about where different pieces fit into the marketplace so that we can really evaluate how is it doing.
Right. And I think, you know, the interesting thing about where we're at with the marketplace is that there are a lot of different tactics that people can pick from when it comes to a lighting control solution. I mean, you know, we talked about the grand concepts of LLC or something like that, but I mean, even from a small level of which protocol you use or which device you choose from, you know, there's still a lot of work to be done with all of this for the purpose of a design of a lighting control system. And I know there's also kind of two perspectives right now when it comes to designing lighting controls, which is, you know, it should be super simple and easy to design and implement. And the system itself is so complex that it really needs somebody to hold the hand of the system. And so I'm curious if you're seeing a lot of that going on at the higher level of, you know, which one seems to be, or if they're both equal arguments to a different sort of problem.
I think, again, it's another trap. It's where people try and equalize the system for different mm-hmm. projects. So like someone says, controls should be easy, and they're right.
Yeah.
But more complex control requirements require more complex systems, require more time and attention, period. That's it.
Right.
And this is common sense, but we tend to look at the category as all this one thing. and it's not. Like when you have a job where there are some simple control requirements, it should absolutely be the simplest. You know, it is application sensitive.
Yeah.
It's a little more tricky than just, you know, in I would say designing a lighting system, because it is sensitive to application conditions. And those application conditions can be variable. Mm-hmm. But it should be simple, and the lighting control system itself should be simple, intuitive, and so on. And the lighting industry is getting better, and control industry is getting better and better at this.
Sure.
The problem is when you get into one of those big buildings and now you have a network lighting control system and it's going to integrate with the HVAC system, that is not simple. It is not going to be simple. And you need to have that expectation, like, oh, I'm getting into this one. I need to make sure that the job builds in enough time, or a specialist like an integrator, or I need to, all those best practices everybody says I have to, I really got to use them for that project. I better get a good OPR and not leave the owner until I get it. And I need to have a good, really clearly worded kind of control intent narrative and mm-hmm. a really detailed sequence of operations, and I need to communicate to all. Those are things that get shortcut and cookie cuttered on a lot of projects for efficiency. I don't think that it translates to the larger project where network lighting controls is being installed, especially if it's working with other systems in the building. You just need to adhere to best practices, rigorously. And you need to have the time for that, and you need to make sure that there's communication and the right people are on the project.
No, and I think that is also one of the things that, from what we're hearing from everybody involved, I mean, it's like you really need to coordinate, you really need to clarify, if you don't specify it, it's wishful thinking. If you don't mock it up, you're really screwing it up. So when it comes to lighting controls, I think your point is valid that if it's a small application, if it's a very simple application, yeah, maybe it is one of those plug and play solutions that we could really lean on. But if it is getting to a complex scale, if it's really integrating with a lot of different systems, if it's really communicating out and expecting to communicate back with a lot of data, that is a bigger handhold through the process. And so, I think to your point, we're almost dealing with levels of skill set mm-hmm. required. And it's almost like mm-hmm. we need people to acknowledge that, okay, some of these lighting designers who say, no, I don't do lighting controls. Yeah, maybe they can do the plug and play stuff. But when they start deviating from that and they start getting into the more advanced stuff, that's when it's like, okay, we need a specialist to get involved here to help out with this.
Mm-hmm. Right. And not just skill, but rigor. Just the amount of time you have available for the project, and some projects are just going to require more diligence and more effort to get right because they have more moving parts and more value to the owner.
Sure, and I think that goes back to a lot of the people who we've talked to who specify lighting control systems, where they say, I spend all day long looking at the cut sheets, looking at the products, making sure that it's in the exact location I need it to be in. Whereas, again, going to other people who don't really specify a lot, it seems as though a very clear control intent narrative is at least a sufficient step forward with the more mm-hmm. simple systems.
Right. Yeah, agreed.
And so, I think all of this is definitely stuff that Lighting Controls Association covers in Education Express, which I think is a great resource for those who want to take that next step forward. But if they want to continue, like it's almost like in level one, if you want to just hang with the simple solutions and lean on experts to do that, you don't necessarily need to tap into the full tapestry of Education Express, but you could start dabbling in the first few courses that help outline mm-hmm. some additional information. But if you really want to drill in, get that CalCTP or CLCP certification, it's a great initiative for that to be able to make the next step to level two, where you can really start outlining and detailing these more complex systems.
Absolutely. We offer, again, everything's a matter of scale and what you need. So if some people come to us and they just want the fundamentals, we have the fundamentals, and then they can go from there based on need. And we don't certify ourselves, and so we just offer the courses, and every course to us is a win. Someone's learning something, They're leveling up on in their profession, and they're able to provide better service to their clients. And then, you know, from there, they'll go from, I understand automatic shutoff, but I need to learn dimming. Then they come back and learn dimming, and that's wonderful. So it's a journey, you know, for everyone, and right. We're always here to support people wherever they are on it.
Totally.
Yeah. So, you know, we've identified that education is extremely important, right? Everyone we talk to says the same thing: education, education, education. So, you know, there's a lot of education for, you know, through Education Express for everybody, but I'm assuming that you see the majority of users are designers or integrators or, right? I'm sure it's a fairly small pool, right? So you just talked a lot about, you know, the OPR, owner's project requirements, control intent, you know, and having all the documentation to put together the lighting system, regardless of scale and size. So a lot of that comes back to education for the owner, for the end user. And how do you think, or what resources do we have for those people? Because ultimately, in order to get all of these requirements and use best practices and have the right people on the team, you really need to make sure that the owner is vested in that as well and has the education. So how do we do that?
You and me will figure it out, and we'll own the lighting and shit. I mean, it's the Holy Grail,
right?
How do you communicate quality, and how do you even define it in the terms of lighting? The owner has the purse. And so if you follow the money, all roads lead to the owner, and all decision making rests with the owner. So educating the owner is absolutely critical. It's just very hard to get their attention. We've made a lot of effort to work with some magazines like Building Operating Management and some other publications and organizations we've tried to work with, but it is definitely an uphill battle. To these people, lighting's like this, you know, and they're dealing with all this other stuff. So we're asking them to have a level of expertise and understanding of lighting that might be a little challenging. But you know, just like any market, there's a spectrum. There are people who get it down here, people who never get it, and everyone else is in the middle, and you're just trying to move the needle. So every article in BOM and so on, and every user at Education Express that we sign up that is an owner, definitely helps. But it's always going to be difficult with lighting, and it's, you know, one of the last things to be installed in the building, and the quality differences are sometimes indiscernible to the owner. I remember back when I was at Architectural Lighting Magazine, you know, I heard the story of this from this designer of, you know, the designer had to take this, had a meeting with the owner's representative and had to get all this value engineering cuts and all this other stuff. And then the owner's rep said, I had to leave the meeting a little early. I had to get a plane to Italy where I'm going to be picking marble flooring for the lobby and of the building. So like, this is something like the owner can see and touch and feel. And I'm kind of like, hey owner, don't you know the only reason you can see and touch and feel that thing is because of light? And they don't, it's very hard to get them to get it. So there's a couple unlucky things for lighting. In the most cases, you don't want to look at it. It's not something you look at, it's something you look with. And so that makes it a little more challenging. And it's something that is one of the last things to go in. And by then there's budget problems. So it's difficult. It's difficult to find an owner to say like, yep, this is what I absolutely want. But I think the decarbonization argument is a potential meta trend. Global warming's a meta trend That's not going to go away, whatever policies we do. But decarbonization as a meta trend may or may not realize, and it may or may not realize in different ways. If we address global warming or climate change, we are going to have decarbonization, and that is going to require policy, and those policies are going to target, I think, to an extent, buildings, commercial buildings. And so that is something the owner is going to have to pay attention to, using their language, talking to a building owner and saying that is a commercial lease property, and saying to them, you're going to get the brown discount. You know, if you are inefficient and you are going to have lower quality tenants paying less than the building down the street. And so to be more competitive, you should do a comprehensive retrofit and be able to offer, this type of building. That is, I think, is pretty compelling. Once you change the economics a little bit, that I think is more interesting to the owner. Sure. It kind of hits them where they live. Other trends like, yep.
Yeah, that goes along the same lines of a lot of the advice when it comes to getting owner requirements from them. Is it's not about, don't start the conversation with tell me about the lighting. It's tell me about your project. You know, if there's a lot of initiatives that are trying to get to net zero, where you're basically leveling out the amount of demand you're putting on the utilities, mm-hmm. you're really going to be driving that conversation by saying, hey, you know, lighting controls can be a part of that solution, and we can help make that a reality for you by adding in these really complex lighting control systems. And so it's the hook in a lot of cases.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I mean, in any conversation with the owner, obviously you're going to ask him to, you know, how is the space used? What are you trying to achieve? And then you look for the lighting solution that would best accomplish that.
Right.
I mean, we want everyone to use lighting controls, but we don't believe every lighting control is right for every building and every application.
Yes.
It's real. So you really have to have that conversation with the owner to see what is the most appropriate solution for them. And you know, that being said, we turn it off. You know, I currently live in Canada, and we had a cold spike and had some energy problems, and so the government was like, do your part. You know, use less electricity right now. And then you look out your window at downtown Calgary, and every commercial building's lit up like a Christmas tree. It's, you know, the least we can do is right there in a nutshell is what's wrong. Right. And the least we can do is turn the bloody lights off. So like I would say every building, unless it's for safety, obviously, or a statute or something like that. But like anytime the lights can be turned off, and when they're not being used, they should be turned off. But other than that, though, you know, scaling up, it really just depends on what you're trying to do.
Sure. Well, we're almost out of time here, so I mean, I want to capture at least some of what we've talked about here.
Yeah. Good luck.
You know, I feel like we just poked the ground and like oil just shot up into the air with all the information. Really great resource, Craig. We loved chatting with you all the time. And so, but you know, as far as things go, you know, from the people we've talked to in the past, there is a huge demand for education, but there is a resource that people can tap into. And I would say that it's fantastic to hear the amount of people you've reached out to, but I would say that's still just a margin of the industry. And so we absolutely should get more people drawn to Education Express, Lighting Controls Association's website, get engaged, talk to people, go to conferences like NYC Controlled or Education. There's so much information out there that is at people's fingertips, ready to be accessed for free. And so, you know, that's part of the whole point here, because of the fact that otherwise we have so many resources just scattered across the internet at this point that nobody knows where to go to look. I mean, there are definitely manufacturers that still produce white papers and informational mm-hmm. bulletins for people to tap into. But having a central resource really makes that a lot easier for everybody involved. And so that's another reason why you guys are doing what you're doing. And, you know, from the perspective of lighting controls, they're only going to get more complex as the needs of the communities develop further. I mean, for a long time, this whole point of reducing lighting demand on the grid was the goal. And like you said, we've succeeded. We're at a really good place with how much energy lighting is consuming in general. I mean, there's still a lot of outliers out there left that should probably upgrade to LED. But as far as things go, the argument is won. We're already there. People know about LED, whether or not they have adopted it. So they know the options out there if they choose to go more efficient. As far as the rebates and utilities go, they are starting to phase out LED upgrades, but they're focusing now more on lighting controls. And so whether or not people think they need to learn about lighting controls if they're in this industry, I would make the argument, yes, you should start learning about lighting controls. Now is the perfect time because it's only going to get harder in the future. And so getting familiar with what's out there, getting familiar with the best practices, understanding the systems that exist and how to improve upon what you're currently doing with your lighting controls will only make things easier in the long run. And so, you know, and we have environmental issues that are really raising major concerns that we can be part of that conversation. And if we don't get a part of that conversation, we could actually lose out on a great opportunity to be included at the table. Where, you know, otherwise, if we don't take that advantage, we could be excluded from that, and other people will be dictating how lighting gets controlled in the future. So that's another incentive for us professionals in the lighting world to really get involved and get engaged and knowledgeable about all of this stuff. So there's a whole host of other arguments as well. We could just keep going down the list, but I mean, really, that's the sum of it. You know, there's a resource out there, tap into it. There's a reason for you to tap into it. But, you know, did I miss anything that's really boiling out of you at this point?
Oh, the only other thing I would mention is that for many years, the Lighting Controls Association was I would consider it like the lightning rod for we want to know about controls. Bang, here. The Illuminating Engineering Society has really stepped up in the last few years, and they have several really good control publications where we used to define what is this. Now they're defining it, and we like that. You know what I mean? Sure. We want the IES to be doing this. Yep. So I would say, you know, we summarize those best practices and we align with them in our education, but you can also get publications at IES on controls like LP6 and so on that are really good. And so I would highly recommend a stop there as well for someone doing the circuit of lighting control education.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. No,
please come to our website. We have a newsletter. It takes less than a minute to subscribe, and then you just can keep up to date with everything that's going on in this world. And then if you want to get the education, you go to Education Express. It takes less than a minute to subscribe. And then you get like access to more than 50 hours of learning in lighting controls that someone's trying to give you for free that you can take anytime you want in video or text format. And that can help you level up in your profession and be more competitive and do better for yourself and your clients. So we hope more people will take advantage of that. I think the way the prevailing wind in the industry, we think people will, and we'll be there for them.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I really couldn't. And thank you, Craig. I hope everyone does take a minute to at least check out Education Express if they haven't checked it out before. And obviously also look at the resources from the IES. I would say, Webster, one thing I hope that lighting controls aren't necessarily going to get harder moving forward. They're going to get more complex. Lighting controls going to get more complex. I hope you might be right. Don't get me wrong. I hope they don't get harder. I hope they just get more complex. Right.
Yeah. It's a semantic, you know, there's a very important one.
There's a few things that obviously could make it less hard, right? Whereas if we start to see more manufacturers adopt interoperability between devices, and if we start to see more standardized language throughout the industry, these are things that will take forever, but they will help. They will help. So hopefully we can start to see some of that. But yes, Craig, thank you so much for coming on today.
Thank you. You
probably just blew people's minds today with a lot of the stuff we talked about. But there's so much going on, and there's so many resources that the LCA has through Education Express. And thank you so much for taking the time to come on with us today.
Thank you.
So I just want to take a minute to remind everyone today's episode was presented by our friends at the LCA, the Lighting Controls Association.
And it's financially supported by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors, or NAILD. Again, check out our website, lightingcontrolspodcast.com, where we have all of our episodes, a news feed, as well as a merch store. And additionally, if you want to check us out, if you're hearing this at its initial release, you probably still have time to register for Leducation. See us at Leducation on Tuesday, March 19th. Otherwise, until then, we'll see you there. Thank you so much for joining us. And Craig, again, thank you so much. This was an awesome conversation.